Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, February 8th, 2011. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. 300 turnout for Lewiston meeting on education funding. Body found in rubble of historical DeSmet building that burned to the ground last week. And Moscow City Council votes against bike rack ordinance. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A group of Idaho Chambers of Commerce is proposing legislation that will give a portion of the taxes paid by new employees back to employers. The Idaho Chamber Alliance bill, which is supposed to reduce unemployment in the state, will get a hearing in the House Revenue and Taxation Committee. The bill would give the employer a 4% refundable tax credit based on the new employee's gross wage if the new employee makes more than $12 per hour. In order to qualify, the new employee would have to receive benefits as well. House Minority Leader John Roush of Lewiston says a Republican plan to cut state funding for health and welfare by $50 million will cause lasting harm. Joint Finance Appropriations Committee co-chairs Senator Dean Cameron of Rupert and Representative Maxine Bell of Jerome say the cut is necessary to fill budget gaps. But Roush says a $50 million cut to Medicaid will mean the state will lose $185 million because of a reduction in federal matching funds. An Idaho state trooper killed a 40-year-old passenger in a Jeep that was eluding police last night north of Coeur d'Alene. Police say they fired multiple shots into the Jeep Cherokee driven by 24-year-old Mark Marion Makopet of Butte, Montana, after the Jeep collided with a patrol car during a chase. The passenger, Christy Ann Little, was pronounced dead at Kootenai Medical Center. Makopet was treated for a gunshot wound and released from the hospital into the custody of police, who charged him with eluding a police officer, aggravated assault, and being a fugitive from justice on a warrant from Montana. Makopet was reported to have walked away from a Helena detention center in October, where he was serving a 3-year sentence for theft. A press release from the Coeur d'Alene tribe says tribal police have found human remains in the rubble of a historic building in DeSmet that burned to the ground last Thursday. Tribal spokesperson Mark Stewart says police had spent several days going through the rubble after a demolition crew knocked over the remaining walls of the smoldering ruin of the 3-story Mary Immaculate School. The tribe had been using the old Missionary Girls School for storage, and the building had not held classes since 1974. Stewart said as far as the tribe knew, there was nobody in the building when it caught fire at about 3 a.m. last Thursday. Tribal Police Chief Keith Hutchison said, "We might never know what caused this fire. We don't know why this person was in the building." Hutchison said in light of the death, tribal police are now working with the FBI to identify the person and to investigate the cause of the fire. Historical records indicate the building was probably built around 1908. Its location on a hill meant the old girls' school was a prominent landmark for travelers on U.S. Highway 95 between Moscow and Coeur d'Alene. Chartered vans will leave from Lewiston heading to Boise at 6 a.m. tomorrow, so those concerned about education funding in the state can testify before the Senate Education Committee about Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna's plans to restructure education in the state. The trip will come after 300 people showed up at a community meeting at the Williams Conference Center at Lewis Clark State College in Lewiston last night to discuss Luna's plan. The legislature is considering two enabling bills put forward by Luna. The plan would eliminate 770 teachers' jobs between now and 2016 to pay for laptops for every ninth grade student and raises for teachers who are deemed better than others by school districts. The plan also would eliminate tenure for all new teachers and limit collective bargaining agreements to 1 year. At last night's meeting, most people who spoke were against the plan, and parents urged others to fight it. Moscow teacher Ingrid Spence, who is on the board of the Idaho Education Association, said, "We would like to stop it cold this week." Also at the meeting, Lewiston Education Association President Bruce Schultz noted that one of Luna's bills would gut teachers' collective bargaining rights. Schultz said, "Mr. Luna wants to take a system that has served the teachers and school boards well for over 40 years and dismantle it. Teachers across the state accepted substantial salary and benefit cuts last year in order to help preserve what they could for Idaho's kids. In exchange, they are being rewarded with wholesale destruction of the fair employment practices they have worked under for the past four decades." A federal judge says Sam and Chalice National Forest administrators failed to consider the cumulative damage caused by off-road vehicles when they approved the forest's travel plan in 2009. U.S. Magistrate Ronald Bush in Boise ruled on Friday in favor of environmental groups who sued over the travel plan. The environmental groups say forest officials ignored evidence that off-road vehicles would damage plants, mountain meadows, stream banks, and hiking trails. Brad Brooks of the Wilderness Society said after the ruling, "Big game and wildlife are coveted by all Idahoans, and we cannot allow one use to destroy what makes Idaho special. There must be a balance between motorized use and protection of wildlife resources." The megalode that began its trip over Lolo Pass Tuesday has been delayed by weather for a fifth consecutive day. The half-coke drum is waiting in Kuski for the weather to clear. The chance of rain or snow for the Lowell area, the halfway point of the route, was 100% when the more than half a million-pound load was scheduled to leave at 10 p.m. last night, so the leg of the trip was postponed until tonight. The Idaho Transportation Department had a slush designation for all 50 miles of the route, saying, "Look out for a mix of rain and snow. The roadway will be wet." The chance of snow is expected to diminish to 20% tonight. The oversized transport is not allowed to move unless the road is completely clear between the fog lines. The load took about 5 hours to reach Orofino from Lewiston last week. It left Orofino on Wednesday evening around 10 p.m., but did not reach Kuski until after 5 a.m. Motorists on the road between Greer and Kuski were delayed as much as 59 minutes as the load negotiated a sharp curve. The trailer carrying the load also scraped a rock outcropping along the road. The Idaho Transportation Department requires the load pull over every 10 to 15 minutes to allow traffic to pass. Once the load reaches the Montana border, it will wait nearby for the second load to join it from Lewiston. Once the two loads meet, they will convoy for approximately 2 more weeks through Montana to Billings, where they will be reassembled and installed at a refinery undergoing rehabilitation. When the second load will depart Lewiston is unclear due to the delays with the first load. The Transportation Department is requiring the hauler, Emmert International, to submit a new travel plan for the second load in light of the excessive traffic delays caused by the first load early Thursday morning of last week. The Moscow City Council last night voted 5-1 against a measure that would require a minimum number of bike rack spaces at most new commercial and multiple-unit residential developments and existing developments that are undergoing expansion. After receiving firm opposition from the Moscow Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors, the council considered a modified version that did not require bike rack sheltering and lighting like the original proposal did. The original plan had received unanimous support from the City Planning and Zoning Commission and the Moscow Transportation Commission, as well as near unanimous support from those who testified at a City Council public hearing on the plan on January 18th. On January 18th, most council members expressed support, but council member Wayne Krause convinced the council to continue the public hearing until last night when the council heard some more support, but also strong opposition. Here's Moscow Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Steve Hacker, followed by local developer Brenda von Wandruska.
After the council decided to table it, it gave an opportunity for Mr. Belknap and I to meet to talk about the ordinance, and that is the nature of some of these amendments that were being proposed tonight. I met with him before entertaining our regularly scheduled general board meeting on Thursday, January the 20th, and we came up with some of the amendments that you see here to make it less burdensome on the existing business community and also to be less burdensome to eventual developments, whether they commercial or multi-housing. I went to present these. Anytime that I speak on behalf of the chamber, I'm required to report to the general board my actions. I did so during the general board meeting. At that point in time, they discussed the issue, and I did present the recommendations based on the conversations that I had with Mr. Belknap to the board. At that time, they had a conversation and had what we would consider an open and public meeting based on the bylaws set forth for our general board, which are the elected representatives of the members of the Chamber of Commerce. At that time, they neglected or decided not to take my recommendations, and in a vote of 11-2, chose to not support the ordinance. But they did want to be very clear that they are supportive of the biking community, feel that through a free enterprise and market system, these can be solved and are committed to doing so, but at this time could not support ordinances that would increase the cost of doing business in Moscow.
I would have liked to support this ordinance as a move towards a greener environment, but the first version of it, I think, I would definitely not support, because the sheltering and the requirement for lighting are certainly not green, and I would think that a green infrastructure mindset would call for natural surfaces to be used. We'd think very carefully about requiring electricity. There is a cost associated and a carbon footprint associated with bringing electricity to a site. There's a cost associated with installing the infrastructure, the component parts of the infrastructure. So if you're trying to think, as I am, to in a sense of making the town more green, I think that this ordinance doesn't do it.
That was Moscow real estate developer Brenda von Wandruska, preceded by Chamber of Commerce Director Steve Hacker at last night's Moscow City Council meeting. During council discussion, it became apparent that Councilmember Tom Lamar was going to be the only member of the panel to vote in favor of the ordinance. Here's some of Lamar's comments, followed by City Councilmember Wayne Krause.
People who ride bikes are not members of a special interest group. Bike racks are not privileges. Bike racks are not amenities. Bike racks represent proper parking spaces for legally recognized vehicles, bicycles. The existing zoning code requires that a developer provide automobile parking under specific standards if that property is to be developed. Some may argue that we should not be requiring any parking requirements, car or bike, for a developer of a store or a church or an apartment building. But if we are to accept that this is a reasonable role of government to make sure that vehicular access to these developments is done in a safe and orderly fashion, then we must accept the fact that some of the people who access these same developments will be arriving by foot or by bike. And therefore, we must provide for pedestrian access and some bike parking. We already require car parking spaces and pedestrian access routes. What we are doing here tonight is making sure we are providing a small percentage of parking for bikes. Again, a bicycle is a legally recognized vehicle. A few unknown facts. Just like people in cars, bicycle riding customers do access car parts stores, drug stores, grocery stores, conference centers, churches, mosques, synagogues, mortuaries, restaurants, and shopping malls, among other places. We aren't talking about special privileges or special interest or an amenity. A bike rack, just like a car parking space, is part of the infrastructure of a modern development. To require that in a development, to require that in development is congruent with our existing expectations for accessing these buildings. Some say that we should allow the bike parking issue to be handled with the free market. In other words, allow people to provide or not provide whatever type of rack that a particular business or apartment building owner chooses to provide or not provide wherever or whenever they choose. If we did this with car parking and allowed the market to dictate spaces, our streets would be clogged with parked cars. It would be completely unacceptable.
I will say that I'm really disappointed in the business community in the way they drew a line in the sand and dug their heels in. I really don't think that was the right way to go, and I'm very disappointed in that. I don't think that the business community had the dialogue. They didn't call me. We got emails saying absolutely not. But it is what it is. Tom spoke quite a bit about comparing vehicle parking to bicycle parking. And Tom, I don't think we can do that. It's just not comparing apples to apples. Bicycle, you don't have a driver's license for a bicycle, you don't pay taxes for a bicycle, you don't aren't forced to license a bicycle. It's much more mobile. If we were going to compare cars and bicycles, then I think bicycles need to start following every single vehicle law, and they don't have to. So it's really not a good comparison, I don't think. This ordinance does not apply to the Central Business District because there's no setbacks. It's city-owned property. Therefore, should the city be required to put in bicycle racks downtown? Because I think we've all agreed that that's where the biggest problem is at. City doesn't have the money to put bicycle racks in. So where do we start thinking that developers have got the money to put bicycle racks in? Stephen, I'm still mad at the business community. Don't get me wrong here. But I think Brenda had one of the most succinct things that she said was we have a problem with bicycle parking. We have an educational problem in getting people to use adequate bicycle parking when it's there. But we need to find a way to do this without putting the burden on the city as well as on the business community.
That was Moscow City Councilmember Wayne Krause, preceded by City Councilmember Tom Lamar. Besides downtown, the other place where the ordinance would not have applied is the University of Idaho campus, which is the other part of the city where bike parking is a persistent problem. City zoning authority is greatly curtailed on the campus, which exists in its own zoning category that gives school administrators authority over most building design decisions. Krause made a motion to reject the ordinance and create a city task force on bicycle parking. His motion also directed city staff to study the feasibility of creating bike rack standards. The motion passed 5-1. A Clarkston woman has managed to fend off two would-be attackers with a fireplace poker yesterday. According to a police report, two males dressed in black hooded sweatshirts and wearing masks knocked on the woman's front door of the woman's 3rd Street residence. When she answered the door, they forced their way inside. The woman then grabbed the fireplace poker and struck one of the men several times with it. The two men left, saying they were not trying to hurt the woman. Nothing was taken from the residence, and the case remains under investigation. The Fraternal Order of Police is supplying legal counsel for the three police who shot and severely injured 69-year-old David L. Payton of Clarkston last week. The two Lewiston police officers and one Nez Perce County Sheriff's officer struck Peyton with five bullets after Peyton allegedly pointed a .38 caliber revolver at them and refused to obey their commands. Peyton is in serious condition at Harborview Medical Center in Seattle. The more than $3,000 taken from the bank has not been found. The officers involved in the shooting will most likely be interviewed by Idaho State Police and Latah County police officers prior to having their names released. Police say Peyton was the person who robbed a U.S. bank teller at gunpoint in the 800 block of Main Street just 15 minutes before last Thursday's shooting. The officers involved in the shooting will most likely be interviewed, and they are on paid leave. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, 20% chance of snow showers before 7 p.m., mostly cloudy, low 21 tonight, partly sunny tomorrow, high near 36, mostly cloudy, low 25 tomorrow night, partly sunny Thursday, high 39, partly sunny on Friday, high 45, currently overcast and 32 degrees in Moscow. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up is Change Surfer Radio, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio at about 6:30. Don't forget to support Radio Free Moscow so we can keep bringing you these daily news reports and the local and regional news coverage on Morning Mix and the public affairs programs throughout the day. You can send a check to 114 East 3rd Street or go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out how to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $25 for students. Thanks for listening. I'm Lee Robartis. Mort Demers assisted with tonight's newscast. This is KRFP in Moscow.